Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Welcome us back. We're back from our admittedly somewhat relaxed summer schedule. It's good to be back with you all. We had to come back because of what's happened to the month of June. All of that. So what's been going on? I normally do some sort of opening thing that I've forgotten all of a sudden, so I'll just get right on to it. I'll just get right to it because, it's Pride Month. It's Pride Month, and so the Weekly Worldview. We were perhaps on track not to do any shows in the month of June until I realized that the month of June, which is the traditional month of weddings, has been hijacked by the perverts and the freaks, and they call it Pride Month. And today, Sunday, June something teenth, the homos were marching in the streets of Denver on Father's Day. Do you think that's just by chance that the Pride Fest March falls on Father's Day every few years? Do you think it's just by chance that it's the month of June that the freaks and the perverts and the homos have occupied as their Pride Month? Well, if you think it's just by happenstance, you would be mistaken. And that leads us right into our Mark of the Beast file. That's right, it's the Mark of the Beast. Right here on the Weekly Worldview. Everybody wonders what is the Mark of the Beast. Here at the Weekly Worldview, we have a file where we regularly point out the Mark of the Beast. And this month, the Mark of the Beast was taken by one Mike Pompeo, who I believe is the Secretary of State. I remember Mike Pompeo as a Tea Party insurgent conservative candidate who stormed into Congress to change the world. And now he's the Secretary of State. And the thing is, if you want to be the Secretary of State, Mr. Pompeo, this was the conversation he had before he was appointed. Mr. Pompeo, if you want to be the Secretary of State, well, you'll have to take the mark. You'll have to, Mr. Pompeo. And Mr. Pompeo got down on one knee and took the mark. And this was on the 1st of June, the very first day of Pride Month. The very first day of Pride Month, Secretary of State Pompeo issued the following. I want to thank my friend Bob in Connecticut for alerting me to this. This is something I would have missed were it not for one of my listeners in the tri-state area. Thank you, Bob. From Secretary of State Pompeo, at Sec Pompeo, so it looks like it's a tweet, Pompeo says the following, quote, "As we begin Pride Month, we stand with the LGBTI community in the U.S. and around the world in affirming the dignity and equality of all people, human rights, are universal. The United States stands firmly with you as you exercise your human rights and fundamental freedoms. We wish you a safe and happy Pride Month." Unquote. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, is a bit of a lisp going in that tweet there. So anyway, this was sent to me by Bob up in Connecticut. I sent Bob an email back. I said, come on, Bob. The Trump administration is the most pro-family administration since George Washington's. Instead of passing around stories like this, you should focus on supporting conservatives like Roseanne Barr and Kanye West. So that kind of dates the whole. Yeah, I know. I've been away for a while. While we were gone, the whole Roseanne Barr became a conservative, and Kanye West became one of the more celebrated conservatives in the conservative movement. But instead, my friend Bob chooses to point up minor incongruities, like the Secretary of State bowing his knee to the homosexual mafia. And I said, hey, Bob, but seriously, Bob, LGBTI? Where did the I come from? I know it can't be one of the alleged genders, or there would have to be about 120 other letters in order for it to be considered inclusive and non-insulting of all of our gender-fluid brothers and sisters. So maybe I said, maybe the I is for in transition. Does anyone out there know what the I is for? Are you aware? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. She's pretty grossed out. I have to apologize. I'm sorry. But it is Pride Month.
So?
Okay. All right. I hear you. Yeah, I get you. I'm with you on that. Anyway, so I asked anyone on the thread to help me. Bob in Colorado piped up. He said, I must mean interspecies. Why not? Okay, so there you go. From the Mark of the Beast file, Mike Pompeo bows, takes the mark, grovels before the homosexual mafia on Pride Month, basically handing over the month that was traditionally reserved for weddings over to the perverts and freaks who march down the street with their tattoos and their piercings, defiling one another in front of God and everyone. And we're all supposed to stand by and cheer and say how wonderful they are. I was in, let's see, during the month of June, I have been in at least 30 different cities, if not 40 different cities. And every one of them that I can think of, from the giant metropolitan areas to the smallest little burgs, all had the pride flags. You know, on the light poles lining the main street in Littleburg, anywhere, USA, they've got their pride flags.
We have it too.
It was sickening. Well, not where we live. No way. In fact, let's be quiet. Let's move on from this subject. Nothing to see here, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Now, meanwhile, I go to the decline and fall file, a report from CNN, as you might expect. Alex Iovine, a 26-year-old, and Emma Pikel, 24, live together in Manhattan. Well, there you have that, right? Nobody's supposed to say they live together. They're shacking up in Manhattan, and they've been dating for nearly 2 years. The couple was headed back to Manhattan after celebrating a friend's birthday at a Brooklyn bar. And that's where Iovine and her girlfriend, she and her girlfriend, Alex is a girl, apparently. She and her girlfriend were sitting on opposite sides of the back seat of an Uber when they started kissing and the Uber driver freaked out and said, hey, don't do that, that's illegal. And he kicked him out of his car. Anyway, there was a story like this a month ago or so, back in May. And I chose not to do it because it was two guys and it was just too disgusting. But I did want to cover the topic of the right of every Uber driver to kick freaks and perverts out of their car. I'm in total support of the driver. His name is Ahmad El Baturi. And he's a heck of an Uber driver. He's got a 4.67 rating and has received dozens of commendations on the app for his excellent service. Now, he's been driving for Uber, has Mr. Ahmad El Baturi. I'm sorry, Butari. Did I say Baturi? I meant Batari. Ahmed. Let's just call him Ahmad. Did I say Ahmed? I meant Ahmad. Anyway, he kicked the dykes out of his car. And now the Taxi and Limousine Commission there in the state of New York has suspended his license to operate an Uber. So they've taken away the man's ability to make a living, at least in this fashion. Because, you see, he refused to take the mark. Oh, maybe I didn't explain it all to you. If you've listened regularly, you know, well, there's a line in the Bible, I believe in the book of Revelation, but it could be in one of the others. So don't hold me to it. If you're not sure, open up your Bible and look and try to find out if I'm wrong. Be an interesting exercise. It says that they could neither buy nor sell unless they took the mark. And so Mike Pompeo, he couldn't be the Secretary of Defense. I'm sorry, Secretary of what is he? Well, he's just a secretary. Does it really matter? Let's just call him the secretary. He couldn't be Trump's secretary unless he agreed to bow and grovel and scrape before the homosexual mafia, the perverts, the freaks, the deviants, the queers, and I, whatever I stands for, those two. And Uber driver here, he can't make a living. He can't participate in business because, well, he was so disgusted by a pair of dykes swapping spit in his car that he kicked him out. And now he can't drive Uber anymore. And so he'll probably have to get another job and hope he doesn't run across any dykes to insult. Because, well, he'll lose his ability to buy or sell because he hasn't taken the mark. And as you can well imagine, here at the Weekly Worldview, we haven't yet taken the mark. All right, now, we delve further. Let's get away from Pride Month before somebody notices that our little town doesn't have those rainbow flags and begins a march to install them. Let's go to the, well, further, deeper and darker into the decline and fall file. A mandate. Well, wait, let me go back. The Boy Scouts of America are soliciting various venues and cities for their worldwide global jamboree. That, yes, they are. It's like winning the Olympics or the World Cup. It's the World Scout Committee is out there soliciting bids for the 24th World Scout Jamboree scheduled for July, August next year. Part of the solicitation includes a mandate issued by homosexuals within the Boy Scouts of America that condoms be made available to all participants at the World Scouts Jamboree. Now, WorldNet Daily, who reported this article, they did not say that it was the homosexuals in the Boy Scouts that issued the order, but that's what we said, is because, yeah. Now, I just wonder, before the Boy Scouts went homo, tranny, all that, before our last Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, got his hands on the Boy Scouts and sodomized them, was there ever a demand in the solicitation of a venue that condoms be made available to the Boy Scouts? I don't think so. But that's where we are. WorldNet Daily reports that the World Scout Committee is demanding that host nations ensure that condoms are readily and easily accessible for all participants and staff. They actually say that. Okay. Now, how nobody is arrested for even suggesting that, I do not understand. They say that any venue who is considering hosting the World Scout Jamboree, any one of the venues' staff there is responsible for communicating the policy to their participants. So the host venue must let the children know about the policy, and of course let their molesters know about the policy beforehand, so that everyone is on the same page, so to speak. All right, that's just disgusting, sickening, awful, horrible. That's the Boy Scouts. Thank you, Rex Tillerson. Let's move to where do we want to go now? Well, it just gets worse. I want to apologize again to my extremely attractive audio engineer for what is going to be just one of these choke back the vomit stories. Chelsea Manning tweeted a picture of himself earlier this month, standing on the edge of a tall building. Yeah, this is from the Queering of America file. Chelsea, you'll remember, is actually Bradley Manning. And Bradley is running for the Senate as a Democrat transgendered freak of nature named Chelsea. Chelsea tweeted, quote, "I'm sorry, I tried. I'm sorry I let you all down. I'm really not cut out for this world." With a picture. Picture of his painted toenails sticking out over the ledge of a tall building. The picture was also accompanied by the phrase, "I couldn't do this anymore. I can take people I don't know hating me, but not my own friends." Okay, so here's the crux of Chelsea's problem. We'll call Chelsea Bradley just so that maybe we get fined by the state of New York for using an improper, well, it's not a pronoun. Well, we're using his birth name, which is an insult to any tranny, apparently. The problem Bradley Manning has, he says, I can take people who I don't know hating me. That's me. Us here at the Weekly Worldview, he thinks we hate him. And that he can tell. Well, we don't hate him, actually. Actually, we love Bradley Manning enough to tell him that his mental illness and his rebellion against his creator is going to lead to his imminent death. And before his death, suffering and misery. We love him enough to tell him that. Now, we also love society enough to mock him as a freak. So that everyone knows that people who act like this are freaks and they're unnatural and they should make you uncomfortable. And you should have to choke back the vomit every time you see a picture of him. And you shouldn't feel guilty about choking back that vomit. But here's Bradley's biggest problem. He says about the people who hate him, he can't take it when they're his own friends. His own friends. See, Bradley is realizing that those people who are entertaining him in his delusion and his madness and his mental illness and his perversion and his self-absorbed, unrestrained appetite actually hate him. And he's starting to sense that, and he's on the road to suicide. Now, I wonder if it's in bad taste to start a pool so that people can pick out of a bunch of boxes. You can pick the year, you can pick the month in which Bradley Manning commits suicide. Would that be in bad taste in the current environment of suicide? Would that be in bad taste? I think it would be in bad taste. So we're not going to start a pool. So although we could do that, we're going to leave, but we're not going to leave Bradley Manning to his own devices. We'll continue to follow up in hopes of pulling him back from the edge. All right, I think that's just about enough of that. I mean, you have to have some compassion for Mr. Manning, please. By the way, if you don't recall, PFC Bradley Manning stole hundreds of thousands of classified documents and gave them to WikiLeaks. He was a traitor, should have been put to death for what he did. Instead, he was allowed to transition into a tranny and in prison, and then I believe he was pardoned by Barack Obama, as Obama was cruising a prison at some point toward the end of his presidency, something like that. I'm not sure of the. All right, now let's go. Speaking of suicide, and who can stop? Who cannot speak of suicide? As we're awash in it, we're awash in suicide. I have a story here from USA Today. Kate Spade. Kate Spade was she made purses and other accoutrements in fashion and whatnot. And for whatever, she was in the midst of a divorce. Her and her husband. Now, nobody has reported that her and her husband were in a bitter custody battle over the children. Before she was found hanging from if I'm not mistaken, it was a belt from a bathrobe, if I'm not mistaken. Not a very glamorous way to be found. Apparently there was a suicide note. Anyway, USA Today reports, and then there's been a suicide since then. What was his name? The big heroin addict food guy, which kind of doesn't go together. Normally you don't think of heroin addicts and cuisine, but Anthony Bourdain was the man who brought those two worlds together. And then now he was found dead, in a hotel in France. So anyway, suicide is becoming, more noticeable. USA Today reports that suicide rates in the U.S. have risen nearly 30% since Kurt Cobain. Actually, they say since 1999. When was Cobain? That was around 90, I think. Anyway, since Kurt Cobain, suicide is on the rise quite dramatically, and as these famous people commit suicide, it becomes more and more acceptable, almost fashionable, to commit suicide. Yeah. And here's what struck me about this article, the reason I picked it out. USA Today reports that nearly half of people who died by suicide had a known mental health condition. So I just want to point out the dawn of a new phrase. This is the dawn of a new politically correct new speak era in the media, because you are now going to see people who kill themselves will be said to have died of suicide. It's as if they were minding their own business, sitting in the kitchen, watching the butter drip into the nooks and crannies of their English muffin, when suicide came up behind them and took their lives. Died by suicide. Now, we used to say that they committed suicide, but that's no longer allowed because that indicates that there could be some responsibility assigned to someone, and that is against the rules in modern journalism. You can assign no responsibility for anything to anyone at any time. And so, before we said they committed suicide, back in the olden days when people were quite blunt and had somewhat thicker skin, we used to say that they killed themselves. Well, did you hear about Uncle Fred? He killed himself, and everyone was shocked. Wow. Because when you said Uncle Fred killed himself, it implied that Uncle Fred was a loser, and he did something wrong. But no longer, Uncle Fred died of suicide. Yes, there was an English muffin found at his feet. We don't know what happened.
What's the English muffin?
It's as innocent as eating an English muffin now, is what I'm trying to say. Okay. Now, here's the thing. Now about Kate Spade, I didn't really know who she was. I'm sure she's a fine human being and a humanitarian and all that. And the fact that I didn't know who she was doesn't mean anything, because she never heard of me. But I didn't know who she was. I don't know her mental state. And I have a feeling that her suicide had a lot more to do with her divorce than any mental illness in her life. Well, and her atheism, which I'm just going to assume, and I apologize if I offend anyone, but I assume that anyone who kills themselves does not believe in God. Because if you believe in God, the last thing you want to do is meet him under the relatively uncomfortable circumstances of having killed yourself. Okay, if you actually believe in him. That's the last way I would want to meet him. But I think that was her divorce. Okay, now these others. Kurt Cobain, we go back to Kurt Cobain. Definitely a mentally deranged drug addict. I mean, he used a shotgun, for crying out loud. There's pretty much no doubt. When you use a shotgun to kill yourself, you're making a statement. This was not an accident, right? But these others... more recently, starting with, when did my suspicions first become aroused? Well, my suspicions were first aroused in the whole world of celebrity suicide with Michael Hutchence, lead singer of the band NXS. Anyway, you go look it up, because it's not something I want to talk about. But then you fast forward, you've got Robin Williams. You've got the Soundgarden guy, Chris Cornell. Then you got the guy from that band from Chicago I never heard of, that everybody liked in the early 2000s. Not the band Chicago. Linkin Park, was it? The singer, right?
I don't know.
Well, and then we've got Anthony Bourdain. Anyway, I'm just going to move on. Suffice it to say that the stigma around suicide has been further obliterated now by the media using the term "died by suicide." So did we start a pool on how long it'll be before Bradley Manning dies of suicide? No, we decided that would be in bad taste. Never mind. Let's move on. So we have entered what I am going to call the summer of blood. You heard it here first at the Weekly Worldview. This is what the Weekly Worldview calls the summer of blood. Because as a nation, we have not hated blood. Blood will pursue us. That's from the Bible. That's a warning from God. And indeed, this is shaping up to be and shall be the summer of blood. You remember the summer of love? 1967? Anyone remember? I was conceived during the summer of love. I've done the math. Yes, but well, this is now this 50 years later. It's the summer of blood. 51 years later. All right, so for that, we go to the Justice File. In fact, I'm going to change. This is now the Summer of Blood file. Yeah, the Summer of Blood. I'm just making a note here. Please bear with me. And there we go. The Summer of Blood file. This is from CNN. Gary Lindsay Jr. Barricaded himself in an apartment with four children, ages 1, 6, 10, and 11. This was in the Orlando, Florida area. A hostage standoff ensued for several hours. Officers entered the apartment and found that all four of the children being held hostage had been killed. Well, CNN says they were found dead. Because if you were to say that they had been killed, that could assign some responsibility to someone. And that's not allowed. But the bottom line is Gary Lindsay Jr. murdered the four children. Two of the children are believed to be his. Two, his girlfriends. And that is... that's the state of domestic tranquility in America circa the summer of 2018. Gary Lindsay Jr., who murdered these four children and then killed himself, he had been arrested for arson and domestic violence and had been arrested four times for violating his probation. Here's another offender who should have been dead instead of being given the opportunity to make his contribution to the Summer of Blood. But he was. He was, and he has. Just awful. Now, from the Justice File, the Sacramento Bee reports that, shockingly, since California's voters' decision to reduce penalties, you remember Proposition 47 passed a year ago, 2 years ago in California? Basically reduced to nothing penalties for drug crimes, property crimes, you know, crimes like drug possession, minor theft, shoplifting, identity theft, receiving stolen property, writing bad checks, forging checks. You remember Proposition 47 reduced the penalties for those type of crimes from the area of a felony, or as defined as felonies, now changed them to misdemeanors. At the time Proposition 47 passed, we made a prediction here at the Weekly Worldview, and you can go back and check the tape. We said that crime, not only small-time so-called petty crime, will rise as a direct result of this, but also violent crime, murder, rape, kidnapping, assault. It's all going to rise because the California voters decided that some crimes are just too small to be dealt with. Yeah, that was 2014. Well, it's now been documented that the passage of Proposition 47 has contributed to a jump in car burglary, shoplifting, and other crimes and other thefts. The study was put together by the nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California. It was released a couple weeks ago. San Francisco alone recorded more than 30,000 auto burglaries in 2017. 30,000! How many is that a day? I mean, that's almost 100 a day. It's more than 50 a day. It's outrageous. Anyway. Okay. So now that all these felonies have been reclassified by the brilliant voters of California, and the documented rise has occurred in property crimes, stick with us through the Summer of Blood, because we will document the dramatic increase of all types of crime, including horrible, terrifying, violent crimes. Daily Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you very much. Welcome back. It's good to have you here on the show where we don't tolerate sponsors, nor do we take phone calls? Is that what we don't do? We don't take calls. Why should we? You shouldn't have to try to carry a show. I'm not Sean Hannity. I can do a show for an hour. I could do an hour a day if I didn't have a real job. Anyway, but we need not stay in San Francisco to document the Summer of Blood. We'll get to some more of that. But first, I just want to, this is from the very beginning of the month, but I thought it was worth noting. Google's motto has long been, don't be evil. But they've removed that from their new marketing. Their new motto is now, do the right thing. So don't, you've gone from don't be evil. They removed don't be evil because they realize that they're so evil that it's really hard to say that with a straight face anymore. And it's not because they gather all my data and they know where I am all the time. I'm pretty much okay with that. I could care less. It's because they advocate criminal and sinful behavior. That's why they're evil. Yes. And they're also a bunch of atheistic, Big Bang-oriented, old Earth, evolutionary, heathen, atheist scum is what they are. And so their new motto, do the right thing, how they are going to determine what the right thing is, I do not know. They certainly cannot inquire of God as to what the right thing is because they don't believe in God. And so I suppose they'll decide, just like they decided what evil was. But even then, eventually they realized they were so evil that they could. Anyway. All right. So that's it on Google. Let's return now to the Summer of Blood. Here in Denver, Colorado, as reported in the New York Daily News, that's right, the little cow town of Denver, Colorado, has managed to make the papers in the big city, where there was a road rage confrontation this past week. And police arrested 23-year-old Jeremy Webster after a road rage incident where he cornered a mother and her children in the parking lot of a business and shot everyone in the car except one boy who managed to escape, killed one of the children, shot and wounded the mother and one of the other children who are, at last report, still in critical condition. So this is road rage, right? Now, we just talked about the voters in California reclassifying minor crimes, so what they call minor crimes, from felonies down to misdemeanors. And so road rage, in the past, road rage was you shouted a profanity at someone who cut you off in traffic, and then you went on about your life. And if you're like me, you looked in the mirror and you thought, sorry, God, I'm sorry I yelled that. That was out of line. That was road rage. Now it ends in the parking lot with, you might get ran over, you might get stabbed, you might get shot, you might get jumped, you might get beaten. That's what road rage is now. Because while the voters may decide to lower the definition of what a crime is or the classification of a crime, crime itself is escalating in frequency and intensity. And this punk who killed this, who shot up this family in this road rage incident, this Jeremy Webster, says he told police he suffers from mental health issues and had just started a new prescription medication the day he shot up a family in a parked car over poor manners on the highway, I suppose. And now shoplifting. Let's talk a little bit about shoplifting. Shoplifting was one of the penalties that the voters of California have determined is just no longer really rates classification as a felony, and so we're going to let things like that slide. At least they are out in New York. Well, if you go out to Deptford Township in New York, where this past week police responded to a report of a shoplifting in progress at a Marshall's. Three suspects fled the store with merchandise, unpaid for merchandise. That's textbook shoplifting. defined in California as a misdemeanor. Well, one of the shoplifters, LaShonda, she ran toward a rented Nissan Armada. Officers told her to stop, but she got behind the wheel and accelerated toward them and struck one police officer, struck a patrol captain. And then she tried to deliberately run over a sergeant who fired three shots into the Nissan, striking Anderson twice, leading her to be pronounced dead at the scene. Did I do that properly? I didn't want to. The shooting struck Anderson twice, leading her to be pronounced dead at the scene. That way nobody's responsible. Well, what happened was the sergeant whom she tried to run over, he shot her and killed her. So here's shoplifting escalating within a matter of minutes into somebody being killed. It suddenly became a death penalty case, at least in the case of one LaShonda Anderson. Yeah. Received the death penalty for, well, technically not for shoplifting, but for events that erupted and led directly from, events that were the direct result of her shoplifting activities, resulted in her untimely death. That's from the domestic tranquility file here in the Summer of Blood. We go to Fort Worth, where Yesenia Gutierrez was home with her 3-year-old son. It was around noon when a break-in occurred at her apartment. Yesenia was later discovered in a pool of blood by her husband. Now, this was just a burglary. Is that really, I mean, is that something we want to count as a major, major type of crime? Just a burglary. Police later located the suspects, two teenagers. Two boys aged 13 and 14 are now in jail on charges of capital murder in the fatal shooting of Yesenia Gutierrez. And it all started as a misdemeanor. Property crime, you know, it's a burglary, please. Now, each one of the killers, the 13 and the 14-year-old who are not identified, each of them blamed the other for the shot that killed Yesenia Gutierrez. And so I would like to, I wonder what would happen if these two were to plead their case in front of Solomon. I wonder if he would figure it out. Well, you don't really have to be Solomon. You just, one blames one. He did it. No, he did it. And then you execute both of them. You find them both guilty of capital murder. And you put both of them to death publicly, so that other miscreants in the community who might be considering breaking into someone's house armed, well, they might think twice if you were to publicly execute these two punks and publicly say, we don't really care which one of them fired the fatal shot. They're both going to be put to death, and if you do the same, a similar fate awaits you. And that would help to stem some of the bloodshed. But you know what else would help to stem some of the bloodshed? Wait, do I want to get to that now? I really don't want to get to that right now. I don't want to. In fact, and let me end with this. At least let me end this segment with this. It's not the end of the show yet. Don't be despondent. There's yet another segment. So here's a story from the New York Post. This came out on Saturday. A second sheriff's deputy has died after being shot while an inmate was being transported to a Kansas City courthouse. How many police is that this year? How many police is that in the last 2 years that have been killed in the line of duty? Well, anyway, I'm driving home from work on Friday when this was breaking news. They were still looking for the suspect. I'm driving home. I hear Friday an interview with a press conference by the chief of police or the chief spokesman. And he's asked by the press, do we know what happened? And the chief said, we have no idea what happened. We don't have any details right now on how it is that one suspect shot two officers. And I thought in my head for just a moment, I wonder if one of the officers was a girl. Now, is that racist for me to think that? So now somehow a prisoner had overpowered two law enforcement officers and shot them both. And so it just fleeted through my head. I wonder if one of the officers was a girl. At the time, only one of the officers was dead. The other was clinging to life. And I didn't hear anything about it until I pulled this story down yesterday, reporting that 44-year-old Deputy Teresa King died early Saturday from injuries suffered when an inmate overpowered the two deputies. Here's a note to all you young ladies out there considering a career path. Law enforcement is a sometimes tough and ugly business. It's tough, ugly work. Best left to big, tough, ugly men. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Yeah, and I don't think it's sexist to wonder. That's all. I just wondered. So let's move on, because I wanted to get to what else. What else could stem the flow of the bloodshed, mayhem, murder, and discontent here this summer, during the Summer of Blood? Well, one thing would be to outlaw adultery again. I said again. I know. So, yes, adultery used to be illegal. Even in my lifetime, adultery was illegal. It was a crime for which one could be arrested, put on trial, and if convicted, punished to the full extent of the law. But no longer. No longer. And so the Summer of Blood rolls on from the Domestic Tranquility File. MLive News reports, this is from Muskegon, Michigan. Jordan Carey was shot to death on a Sunday morning at his home in the city of Muskegon. The suspect, Matthew Hartman, was shot to death later on in the morning by the police. Hartman had been holding his wife at gunpoint in their home when he was shot and killed by police. In an interview, police said, "We believe that the suspect came to the door and confronted Carey about an alleged relationship with his spouse." Yeah. After the shooting, Carey fired a shot. I'm sorry. After shooting Carey, the killer, Hartman, fired a shot at Carey's girlfriend. The shootings in Muskegon, according to MLive.com in Muskegon, the shootings in Muskegon were the second in the city over the past two weekends. Back on April 13th, Tommy Davis and Brittany Severy were shot in a car parked downtown when Severy's husband caught them together in the car, and it was Severy's husband who was later identified as the shooter and was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Right there in Muskegon. Muskegon, Michigan. Not exactly known for a high crime rate. The Severys, by the way, were going through a divorce, as you can well imagine. The Domestic Tranquility File. We go now from Muskegon, but back to the Bronx. Here we go. A man set his girlfriend on fire in their Bronx apartment, killing her before dying himself in the fire that he started. Police say the man had caught his girlfriend with another man at about 1:30 in the afternoon on Saturday on the second floor of the five-story building. So the man doused his girlfriend with a flammable liquid and set her ablaze. The alleged lover jumped from a window and apparently survived. Fire officials, now listen to this. The New York Post reports that fire officials were still trying to determine what kind of accelerant was used. To which I wrote, but authorities will not look into the crime that instigated the murder. The crime of adultery / fornication. They won't look into any of that. Because they don't look into, they'll spend $50,000 figuring out whether he used diesel, gasoline, or barbecue lighter fluid. That's what they'll nail that down to the molecular compound used. They'll be able to dial you up a chart showing the molecular makeup of the accelerant, but nobody will admit that rampant adultery and fornication leads to murder. Okay, so there you have that. Now, from the Queering of Ireland file, as we draw to the end of the program, Ireland voted in a landslide at the end of May now to legalize abortion. Yeah, well, what they did was they, listen to how Reuters reports this, they liberalized their highly restrictive abortion laws. So what that means is in Ireland, abortion was legal. You just had to do it a certain way and go by certain rules, so, which means that abortion was legal. That's, you can stop with the rules and the hoops and the jump through, and you got to sign this, and you got to have a consent, and you got to go take an ultrasound. You got to get three priests to bless your abortion. Well, whatever the rules were, abortion was legal, and now they've simply made it very easy to acquire. They had made it difficult. But you see, once you say it's legal, in the minds of, well, everyone, it's legal. And whatever restrictions you put up, that's all just window dressing to make yourself feel better during Sunday services. If you even attend anymore there in Ireland, which very few of them do. They're usually out clubbing until early Sunday morning. Now, so anyway, they've... and why do I call it the Queering of Ireland if the story's about abortion? Well, the liberalization of the abortion laws in Ireland was celebrated by Prime Minister Leo Varadkar, who had campaigned for the repeal of the abortion regulations there in Ireland so that there could be free and easy abortions for everyone. And why Varadkar campaigned for the repeal? Well, he's Ireland's first openly gay prime minister. So what are the odds he was going to be involved in an abortion? Very slim that a homosexual is going to be. But regardless, for whatever reason, the homosexuals are obsessed with killing children. It's really weird. It's as if they have a rule in the homosexual community. If we can't molest them, then let's kill them. Is that going too far to say anything like, is that considered politically incorrect during Pride Month to say that? I apologize if I've offended anyone. The authorities will be kicking in my door before you know it. I'll probably be arrested doing this show one of these days. One of these days. Anyway, because things change, and things can change dramatically. And they have. Just over the past, 30, 40 years. Of course, that's just what I see, because that's the only time I've been around. I'm sure things seemed like this. I remember in the 70s. Christian friends of mine, when I was a little kid, were sure it had to be the end of the world. And not long after Stonewall, it had to be the end of the world because the homosexuality was becoming decriminalized in the 70s. That was it. And look how far we've devolved since then. All right, but things do change, and sometimes they change for the positive, even if it's for the wrong reasons. We go to the politics file for just such a story, where China is planning to end all limits on the number of children a family can have. Yes. Is it because the premier of China has had a come to God moment and realized that they had slaughtered hundreds of millions of people? No, it's not. Was it some type of national repentance as the Chinese wanted to ask God for forgiveness for forcing generations of young women to abort their children? No, that's not why. It's because they need more people to contribute to the pension. The old people are worried that nobody's going to be around to work to pay their pensions when they're old. Yes. So the State Council, China's cabinet, they launched a research project on the one-child policy, and they plan to replace the population control policy known as one-child. They're going to replace that policy with what? Liberty and freedom for all? No. They're going to replace it with a new policy. A new policy, yes. As if the government should have a policy on fertility. It's just bizarre. But they do. So they're going to scrap the old policy. They're going to introduce a new policy called independent fertility. Independent fertility will allow people to decide how many children to have. Do you really need a policy for that? I mean, wouldn't no policy pretty much be that policy? No, bureaucrats, they need a policy. You can't just get rid of policy and allow people to be free. The bureaucrats go crazy because they don't know what's going on. There's no policy. What could happen if we didn't have a policy in place? Bloomberg reports that the policy change would close the book on one of the largest social experiments in human history, which left the world's most populous country with a rapidly aging population and 30 million more men than women. So that's why they're doing this. They're doing it not for any moral reason. They're doing it because they need more people to feed them when they get old and take care of them. Which, a note to all you young people out there and all you old people. If you want someone to take care of you when you're old, it's wise to take care of numerous people while you're young and while they're little. Have lots of kids, and hopefully one of them will end up with the wherewithal to take care of you when you're old. All right. Now, what do we have here? Ah, yes, Chick-fil-A. The CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, expressed regret over eating at Chick-fil-A. What he did was he posted a picture on his Instagram of a Chick-fil-A sandwich saying yum yum or something like that. One of those annoying, nothing annoys me more than if I open Facebook and I see a plate of food and somebody's comments about it. It's just, please. I mean, couldn't you make some effort? I mean, really? An ice cream sundae is delicious? Wow, that's deep. A Chick-fil-A sandwich tastes great? Yeah, duh. Anyway, it's not really very entertaining Facebook fodder or Instagram fodder. But that's what he did. He posted it up there, and he was immediately attacked by one of American's preeminent lesbian freaks, Soledad O'Brien. She called him out. She said that he had sinned by publicly eating at Chick-fil-A during Pride Month. Which, that's what she said.
Wow.
Now, I don't actually know that she's a lesbian. I just assume that she is. Okay, I apologize if I've offended anyone who can be offended, which is everyone. And I especially apologize if I've offended Soledad O'Brien. If you're not a lesbian, Soledad, I mean, I'd have to see some evidence, but, you know, anyway, I apologize. But for her to indicate that he had sinned, anyway, it's just funny how the liberals steal their sense of moral indignation, and even their word, they steal it all from God. Because if you're actually marching in the gay pride festival, stripped naked to the waist with piercings and body paintings on psychedelic drugs. And can you really sin at that point? I mean, could you sin in the eyes of anyone marching around you? Is there any such thing as sin? The only sin could be telling the people around you that they're sinning. That's the only sin you can commit at that point. Just scrape off the body paint to wake up with a hangover. And remember that someone told you that you were sinning. All right. Now let's go now, as we're rapidly running out of time, to the Queering of America file, where Donald Trump's slavishly devoted fans at Breitbart, You know, it's almost comical. The lengths that Breitbart will do to portray Donald Trump as a conservative. And here's a textbook example. Donald Trump attended a G7 breakfast. You remember the G7? That's the Gender Bender 7. It's supposed to be a meeting of the seven economic powers of the world, but it's really just a big pile of deviants and perverts. And they had a gender equality breakfast that was scheduled for 8 a.m. And Donald Trump went to the gender equality breakfast along with that little queer Justin Trudeau from Canada, Christine Lagarde from France, a genetically and gender ambiguous strange bird there. And then Angela Merkel, who knows what that is? Just sick. Angela Merkel. So Trump, Trudeau, Christine Lagarde, and Angela Merkel all attended the Gender Bender Equality Breakfast at the G7. But what does the headline in Breitbart read? Donald Trump shows up late to the Gender Equality Advisory Council. And they point out that he showed up 17 minutes late, meaning he's a conservative. Because he kept the perverts and the queers waiting for 17 minutes. Because Donald Trump cares about America. That's why. It's America first, by golly, at the Gender Bender breakfast. Meanwhile, we have Jeff Sessions quoting the Bible. And I just want to congratulate Jeff Sessions for being the first attorney general I've heard mention the Bible in my entire life. I've never heard an attorney general of the United States quote the Bible at all. And he quoted it regarding immigration, but that's beside the point. He quoted Romans, and he quoted, Nehemiah. That would be in the book of what? Nehemiah, as a matter of fact. So he quoted Romans and Nehemiah. And I just want to thank Jeff Sessions for that. I know a lot of people are upset with Jeff. And I could go either way, but I just wanted to point out the historic event of a secretary, not a secretary either. He's a general. He's the attorney general. And he actually quoted the Bible for the first time, as far as I can tell, in about 50 years. And now we'll close the show by going, as we are often wont to do, to the science really file, where the NASA Curiosity rover has discovered matter on Mars. Matter, I said, yes. NASA made an announcement last Thursday that the building blocks of life have been discovered in 3-billion-year-old organic matter on Mars. And so they, by the way, the 3-billion-a-year-old, they just state that as if it's a fact, as if they know for a fact that the organic matter on Mars is 3 billion years old. It's not up for debate. It's not allowed to be questioned. If you question it, you haven't taken the mark. And it's one of the other parts of the whole mark of the beast. You cannot question old Earth cosmology, 5.464 billion years old, or you're going straight to hell. If you don't confess that the universe is 4.645 billion years old, you are sinning, and you're going to go to hell. Well, they say they found, this was in a study published in the journal Science, which is a peer-reviewed journal, by the way. That means other delusional Big Bang cosmologists all give their imprimatur. Imprimatur, is it? Anyway, they all say, yes, 3 billion-year-old. The findings, USA Today say the findings are remarkable in that they show that organic material can be preserved for billions of years, even in the harsh Martian surface. We would have never thought that. Because everybody knows that the preservation of organic material for a billion years is just, that's obviously ridiculous. It's so obviously ridiculous and impossible that these guys will probably win the Nobel Prize because they've said the most ludicrous thing with the straightest face. We've got organic material that lasted 3 billion years. Folks, it's just not possible, okay? It's just obviously impossible, but here it is on the pages of USA Today as if it's a fact. Finally, They say that the complex carbon chains that on Earth form the building blocks of life have been discovered. Well, just a note, molecules, they do not form anything. They do not form it. Molecules don't form anything. Now, molecules can be formed into things by an intelligent designer or creator. Molecules could be formed into everything, including a man, by, let's just say, the living God. How about that? The creator God. Not to put too fine a point on it. I could just say intelligent design or an intelligent designer. But I'll go out on a limb and I'll say the living God, the creator, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, the father of Jesus Christ, the creator of us all, and the judge of all the earth. He can form molecules into things, but molecules don't form anything, despite the fact that USA Today says that the complex carbon chains that on Earth form the building blocks of life have now been discovered on Mars. The molecules look similar to the goopy building blocks of oil and gas on Earth. And so we're on the brink of discovering life. We've got something that you can scoop up into a globule and set it on fire. And they call it the building blocks of life. Okay, all right. Well, you know, if you're that desperate, maybe you should be out on the ledge with Bradley Manning and maybe we can try to talk you back, but maybe not. Maybe not. All right. So is that all we've got? A little bit of good news, finally. Unless you're a farmer, although this could be good news for a farmer. Manufacturers are racing to develop robo-tractors and other self-driving farming equipment to produce more food more sustainably at lower costs. This is from the Wall Street Journal. The self-driving tractors are expected to be popular with elderly farmers. Can you imagine? Not having to get in and, yeah, it's all GPS. You hit the button, it scans your field. Anyway, so they're going to develop self-driving tractors after that, tractors that can plant, fertilize, and spray pesticides. Now, there are a lot of obstacles. This isn't going to be easy, but self-driving robotic farming is on the way, and I can't wait because I wanted to get a tractor until I drove a tractor, and then I realized maybe I don't want to get into this. So I'm all for one that's directed by the satellite and uses the stars for guidance and does everything for me. All right, so that's it for the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at Denver Bible Church and, of course, at American Right to Life and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at theweeklyworldview.com. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.